I have.
Okay, this is board time, Wednesday, September 23rd at 1:31.
Okay, welcome. First item on the agenda, approval of the minutes for September 16th. Is there a motion?
Can we approve this agenda first?
Sure.
So I have no information about the accessory dwelling unit. I got nothing in my packet about that.
That should be part of this. You don't have that in the last part of your packet? Do you have yours, Tom?
Yes. I have a couple of things on.
That's it.
So this is from Peter Selleman?
Yes. Are you good with the agenda?
I sure would like to have the stuff earlier. I think I found this stuff on my desk this morning. So, but I'll approve the agenda. We can at least talk about it.
Sure. Okay. You're good with the agenda, Tom?
A second.
There's not a first yet. Is there a first?
Okay.
To approve the minutes? A motion?
Did we get the minutes corrected from last time? There was some. You had some things that you wanted to fix.
Oh, those are consent hearing minutes. That was Councilor Stewart wanted to be changed to more accurately reflect her comments. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer will be back tomorrow, and we'll have that discussion.
Okay.
These are different minutes.
Oh, okay.
These are board time minutes.
Yes. So, is there a motion to approve September 16, 2015 minutes?
Yeah, I'll make a motion to September 16 minutes.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. The minutes for September 16th are unanimously approved. Okay, 1.2 is a proposed 2% property tax reduction. Let me set this aside here. And this was introduced last week with the graphics and with the actual records from all the previous years leading up to this, both the red being the property tax revenue, which had a 1.4% average increase beginning in 2010, and the blue bars stacked on top of that, sales tax primarily generated by business compared to the residences only. Residents and all property owners for the red. 9.6% average annual income or revenue increase for sales tax since 2011, providing a combined stack between property tax and sales tax of 4% per year since 2012. We had a, per Councilor Stewart's request, another bit of input forecasting, a very dark and bleak future, that what would happen if we didn't manage expenses. Of course, the ship would leave the channel and hit the rocks. The car would run off the road and crash. And I asked the budget office, because I've seen this numerous times before, so I had them just simply pull up records from the past that showed the same consequence of not controlling expenses. And in the past, these have been used for arguing for property tax increases. And as you can see, this one here from 2001, 2002, shows a forecast. Back then, instead of having a 20-some million dollar general fund balance, it was less than 10. And starting in 2000, the high point was 9.4 million in the general fund balance, dropping down to being a negative 8.6 million in a matter of a few years. That never materialized because, of course, that cannot materialize. That's why we have financial stewardship and responsibility of leadership that says, no, that we will not let the ship hit the rocks. Another one, same story, basically. This is produced by the budget office. And we showed back then, this was as of 2004, the high in the general fund balance was over $10 million less than it is now. It was at starting at $13.2 million. And, of course, the challenge was to bend the curve so that the expenses would become less than the revenue. And, of course, it projects that it didn't do so or wouldn't do so, and that we would end up with a negative general fund balance. And so these are what we receive is not new. It's what naturally occurs when we allow expenses to exceed revenue and we don't somehow fulfill our financial responsibilities to make ends meet. I've also provided a copy of, I highlighted areas of it here. This is what was the most recently published document as of August 31st by our auditor's office. It's called the Clark County Financial Trends Monitoring Report, and that is a true snapshot, kind of a yearly doctor's checkup to see how well is the patient. And the areas in there show that we are in very good situation. We see a couple of red lights in there that shows that it's really bad news. And then the bad news is that somehow our operating revenue per capita is less, which in taxpayer lingo is we have lower taxes per citizen, which they would consider to be a green light positive. So it really has to do with perspective on these things. So I hope that you've had opportunity to go through this report that's published on the transparency page and the other information provided on from the budget office. And I understand there's a challenge, and the challenge is how in the world do you maintain fiscal policy that we've adopted financially conservative, not cut services, and yet not cut the services that are the primary duties of our county, and somehow save in expenditures. And that's why we have competent leadership, Mr. County Manager, and department heads who can take that challenge and find a way, gives plenty of opportunity to say how you recommend that we do this. And the proposal here is worded, provided in a single sentence here that I hope that we can approve. The BLCC directs our Clark County Manager to prepare for a 2% cut in our 2016 property tax levy plus new construction this December, and to plan the changes necessary to balance our 2016 budget while maintaining our current fund balance policy. So that's the proposal. Is there a motion to approve and discuss?
I'll do that. I'll make a motion to approve so that we can have more discussion.
Is there a second? Okay. I'll second that motion.
I've been cramming in the last 2 weeks of getting parts of this. And even today, with our assessor, we played devil's advocate, bouncing back and forth. And then I've also been informed that it's come kind of quick, and we have some elected officials who are very concerned and therefore not supporting it at this time. And so what I wanted to ask is, if we move forward with this, I really like the concept of doing this, and I think that originally I was looking more as a sales tax, but to me it's the same thing. It doesn't matter if it's the property tax or the sales tax. Both of them would kind of set a new precedent that something, a tax was lowered of this magnitude. I am concerned with other elected officials being on the other side of this issue. It's kind of interesting. I've also talked with Budget Bob Stevens, with respect. And I said, Bob, we've always seen these charts that the cost of government going faster than our income. And that's when we went back and we started reviewing all these incomes. And that's when we discovered that even during the bleakest of times, during the last recession, our property taxes was averaging $1 million more the following year, even during really, really bad times. And now that we're starting to improve, and I think with the fee holidays that we have on impact fees and whatnot, that our sales tax is just, it's going like an average of $2 million a year. And my question when I talked to Bob about it was, you know, what happens? You always show these lines going apart. He said, well, I wouldn't let that happen. That's mm-hmm. his job. He wouldn't let that happen. But we've already made an adjustment along the way. We either, like, for example, we became self-insured for health care, mm-hmm. or we've done something to adjust along the way. We've made improvements. I hate to think that we're done with good ideas, mm-hmm. But of course, good ideas don't line up at my door. But I'm sure there's something we could do along the way to improve, mm-hmm. along with the economy. So I like the idea. I support the idea. I'm concerned and would like to talk to some other elected officials as to what truly is their concern as to what they're afraid of. Mm-hmm. In fact, we have an expert here today, and maybe I'll get some input from him. And then the other thing I was concerned with is that I would like to do one or the other. To me, they look both the same. So, time being what it is, some of the questions I wanted to ask and understand better is that when can we make a decision to do this, and when does it have to be done in a timely fashion before next year? That's what I understand.
If I can just simply jump in there for a moment. This decision here is a planning decision. It's not a commitment for us to actually lower the property taxes. The decision is typically the first Tuesday in December, where we meet and decide what the levy will be for the next year. It would be irresponsible for us at that point to surprise staff and say, even though you didn't plan for it, even though we did not give you a heads up, with an 11th hour, one of the last meetings of the year, by the way, find a way to cut taxes for 2016. We can't do that. So this decision today would be, it directs our county manager to prepare. In other words, provide the proposal necessary for us to be able to retain, uphold our adopted policies. What would you change? What would you do in order for us to be able to achieve this for the citizens, to ensure that we don't handicap our own staff in doing so, so that when that December meeting does come, we will have done our homework, mm-hmm. and we can make the call at that time.
Well, I like that, because it gives us time to look at the pros and cons. I was just saying that if we have the time to do this, and the intent of us wanting to do this is clear, I do want to do this. We are in what I believe is a financial opportunity, that we're doing good on property, we're doing good on construction, we're doing good on the sales tax, we paid off our lawsuits, and we've met for at least 2 years the obligation to our collective bargaining units. But I don't know what's next, and I assume that we're going to continue to do better as population grows and as more people purchase things here. As our population grows, of course, they spend money, and that's our sales tax. They have homes, and that's our property tax. So, my intent is definitely to moving forward on it. I still want to hear the pros and cons, not just on property tax, but also on the sales tax end of it. And that's to, I think what I see and what we have, that we are financially stable to do this. And I know that, and I've been told that we're right on track. Our next biennial budget, we're looking good. But at the end of our next biennial budget, we start to separate again. So, and I don't understand why, so I'd like to have more conversation with staff so I understand why.
And naturally, so that will follow. Nothing happens without planning. But if we set in motion a plan that says, let us know, come up with the options, inform us as to what would change in order for us to be able to choose that option responsibly come December, we would not, I think, do our due diligence, allow staff the opportunity to do our due diligence if we don't allow them to plan ahead to provide us that option. Those answers, in other words, this is, hey, Mr. County Manager, you plan and you inform us and you show us and you work with us and over this between now and December of what would be the means to do so, what would be the path forward. If we don't allow this planning to happen, then of course we would not be able to have that option in December. The September 18 was the cutoff time for this particular this budget readopt and budget.
When is it?
September, last week, September 18.
I understood that there wasn't a cutoff date.
Well, in the getting all the input to the budget office, that ended on the 18th, right, Mark?
Yes.
Yes, and
well, tell me what that means. What information?
Department directors and elected officials who wish adjustments to their budget to be considered and approved by the board needed to submit their requests by Friday of last week.
Okay. It's not a deadline for us. We still need to
look at that budget.
The budget office needs to compile.
I really don't see any negative impact to the department managers and directors.
Well, you can bet that we'll hear a lot of negative impact from all of the above if we propose a cut.
I want them to show me when we have a different number in
your
budget. Exactly.
We will only hear that if we if we plan ahead and say these are the trade-offs.
So what I would like to do, rather than do this verbatim of what we have here, and that I would support giving direction to our manager that we are moving forward with one or the other, and we're going to get more input, and that we come back maybe next week with more knowledge of this. But the intent and the message is today is not just property tax, but any tax. So what it does is it's going to tell me what are our fears? We have the dollars today to pay the bills. So what are those fears that we might be hearing from my other elected officials? And I want to respect that, as well as our department heads. And I think we might be able to do that in a week, as long as we have time and we've given the direction that we are doing much better. You know, one of the things I look at is that under current budget, what we paid off in the millions of dollars in lawsuits of the performances of the past, and we paid off no less than $15 million.
Now, if I could clarify, the $10 million settlement, we borrowed money. John borrowed money from Bank of America, and we're paying about $1.6 million a year over what, six more years?
Yeah,
7 years.
And we're a year into that, so we have six more to make, and that's. That was an unplanned expenditure out of the general fund.
From the 1990s suit.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So we haven't paid that off, and we're still paying on the lawsuit for clean water. That's a six-year obligation.
Right.
Out of the clean water.
But that's not general fund, though.
Right.
The 1.6.
If it's not general fund, it's not related to this topic.
Correct.
Yeah. So I...
But we paid
cash
for...
Thank you for that reminder.
We paid cash for all of the capital improvements. We've got
which ones?
which capital? The two major software packages for the sheriff's office, the record system,
the management system. We assigned fund balance.
The 800 megahertz radios, the cooling tower for the HVAC system, the permit center.
How much were those? I need to ask that question because we're looking at update ORCA right now. Is that correct?
Oracle. That's a project that we are embarking on now. We don't know how much that's going to cost ultimately.
Okay.
We have a really good team put together that's beginning the work to replace our Oracle financial system.
Okay. So how much have we paid off in the other systems? Doing away with the 800 megahertz and whatnot.
Well, we paid cash for the radios. We set aside money for region, for jail management, and for the Tidemark replacement.
And those are all millions
so
each.
I think the sum total of the building fund is picking up quite a bit of the cost of Tidemark, but there is a general fund contribution to that as well. But we're talking $5-6 million that we set aside to handle the sheriff's software improvements. And
So I would like to be able to reassure those other elected officials of what we've done under current budget. With the, like you say, even though we've got a loan to pay off the other $10.5 million, that we're very stable in paying that off. Well, we also called our bonds in. We called in one of the bonds. We kept the other one out there for credit purposes. So we've done very well, and we've paid off multi-millions of dollars under current budget. So I want to see how that, if we did that under current budget, what's that going forward? Why are we hearing that in 2 years that we're going to have another separation? So I would, and I think I can have that information in a week, and this way it gives any research that you want to, you have questions also, I imagine.
Well, I'd like to second. Join the conversation.
Well, we just jump right in there.
We
never stopped
turns,
you before.
And it's your turn.
Yeah.
It's my turn.
Yes, ma'am.
So several weeks ago, when the resolution came forward to hold future councils to not raising property tax any more than 1% per year, I had asked for financial forecasts, and I think it was when the conversation started, not just about the 1% ceiling, but about, in addition to that, a 2% rollback, that I ask in a stronger tone to get financial forecasts. So Adriana produced a financial forecast. And do you have copies of it?
Mm-hmm.
And you have copies of it?
Which ones? Those? Yes, I've seen them.
You've seen this?
They've been pretty much standard since I've been here.
Yeah. Well,
we have that growth. That growth, I understand, is primarily employees and benefits separating from the income.
Yeah.
And but it seems like we always take a deal prior to that. And that's assumption, and that's educated guess of where it's going. Assuming that we do nothing, is what those charts are.
Sure. So you have the floor. Come here.
So what I asked for was based on the fact that the county has done a good job forecasting, and an effective job of managing and controlling costs. And some of that influence has been councillors, and some of that influence has been people who know how to do their jobs here. So what this reflects is that there is, as there is in most governmental operations, what develops is a structural systemic deficit that increases over time.
Thank you. Mine's in there.
And that is sort of a naturally occurring thing that happens in governmental agencies, where the expenses tend to increase faster than revenue does. And this, if you look at the circle toward the right-hand side, what it means is that that deficit out over time, and this goes out to about 2020, which is really not a long-term forecast because that's 5 or 6 years out. This shows that that trend continues, but at any point, corrections can be made in that and need to be made in that to keep that from being ever widening. And we have the ability internally, because we have some good people, to help us figure out how to minimize that deficit and keep it as low as possible. But when I hear a 2% rollback, I don't know. What I want to do is look at a forecast going forward, which this does, but it only assumes that the trend and path that we know we are on continues. And it does not include, when we look at the spending, what it does not include is, and we've been hearing about for several months, some new projects that we're going to have coming on board. So we have IT projects that we need that are part of the general fund, which is where the property tax goes. So what we have is Oracle, an antiquated phone system, which is a report that we've had, record content management. I'm not sure what that is. In a moment, I'll ask you to explain that. IT security and climate and compliance, which are really not optional. Those are things that will be required. So that's $6 to $10 million, just in a rough approximation of what we would need to do those things that are scheduled out that are normal improvements or replacements. The jail ventilation system is an $800,000 one-time cost. General fund parks maintenance, we know we need $1.5 million per biennium. Potential comp plan costs for 2016, $300,000. And then we have some other costs that are sort of an assemblage of other costs. So the information I'm looking for is, if we know that we have this increasing structural deficit, and we know we have some expensive projects coming down the road that require a general fund share, how does that fit with logically with reducing property taxes by 2%, which is a general fund revenue source? And so I try to think about that in the way that I would think about, simply my own home and my own forecasting of my own income and expenses. And if I know I have deferred expenses, How would I meet that if I decided to take a pay cut? It would change my plan and my forecasting. So just simply put, I don't see. It seems to me that in order to get the improvements that we believe we need, that it's counter purposes to reduce our funding source for that. And regarding reducing sales tax, I really haven't heard anything about that. So I hear that thrown out here today, but this is the first I've heard of any proposal to also reduce sales tax, because that could only be the county share. You can't reduce the state portion, you can't reduce the city portion. So that would have to be the county's discretionary percent, which I have to admit I don't know even exactly how much that is. So it sounds to me like we're cross purposes with some of our goals for some projects that we need to do versus having a revenue source to contribute to that. So
when you're done, I'll follow up.
Well, there's no way to explain this away.
Actually, just let me know when you're done. I want to hear you out.
Okay, and then I reserve the right to counter.
Of course.
I would be disappointed if you did, and of course, the conversation has to go two ways. Okay, if I look at this graph, what it shows me, I assume that the number on the left y-axis that goes from 110 million to 180 million refers to the blue and the red bars up above. And if I make some wrong assumptions here, please somebody correct me.
Well, do we have anybody from the finance team here?
John Payne.
So is that correct,
well,
John? You're looking at the same graph.
Have you seen Adriana's?
Okay. The blue one, okay. The red one.
Maybe in we could hand a copy.
Yeah, in the left axis, there's two. There's a number.
Should we summon the author of this document?
Yes. Is that possible?
That'd be on you, Adriana. Okay, so let me look at this. What this shows us in the big picture here is that we, in 2015, we have a fund balance that is at least three times higher than any of the previous numbers that we've seen similar graphs from in the past from the budget office.
That's what the green is?
$30 million. We have never been as healthy as that. We are an extremely, that's the most healthy we've had in any history considered here.
Does that represent the reserve?
Yeah, that is the reserve.
We always talk about days. We never talk about dollars.
You can translate to it.
So when we say we have 57 days, that's $30 million.
And I think the recommended is $23 million. So we are well above both in days and in dollars.
No, I think it's like 52.
What's that? No, right here. It says right there on the graph.
Recommended?
Right there.
$23 million.
Yeah. So we're at 30.
How many days is that?
Oh, they can tell us. That's,
okay, that's
above our target.
We're talking apples and oranges here.
Well, it's two units of measure. So if I look at the starting point there, the one just above that point right there, that's today. That's this year. And if I look at where they're going, the assumption is that the expenditures are going to grow over the next several years $30 million.
Should we hear a minute?
And the revenue is going to grow by about half that, $15 million. That, in other words, $15 million. If I look over the last, so this is for 5 years. If I look over the last 5 years, I see that the total amount has increased from, let's go back, let's say 2010 to 2015, $13 million. That's a pretty healthy growth in revenue. And we balance the budget each of those times, even recovering from that recession from 2010, to the point where now we're sitting at a fund balance of $30 million. What this says, what this graph says to me, is that if we took our hands off the steering wheel, and we allowed expenditures just to climb at a rate of $30 million, which is twice as what it's climbed over any period of time in our history, that's what would happen. So my projection for the future would not be to double the rate of growth of expenditures that we've had for the last 5 years and forecast that for the next 5 years. That would be a departure that would be way above twice what we've had in our history. That would be irresponsible on my part. Adrian, I just wanted to confirm that the numbers on the left side of the y-axis is the numbers that apply to the red and the green lines on our graph?
They apply to everything in the chart.
What's the numbers on the right?
So they should be about the same. Their revenue and expense, I believe, on the left. Sarah, I think, put these on the left, and the right should be the fund balance. The numbers are on the actual fund balance.
So the fund balance numbers on the right look like they apply to the green bars on the bottom and the one red
projected
line.
Projected fund balance.
And the red and blue lines apply to the left axis.
Right.
Okay, that helps.
In other words, I look at the starting point when you first came in, Adriana, 2015. We're currently sitting at $30 million for the fund balance for general fund.
That's the projected ending fund balance as of the end of 2015.
And you're very good at projecting in the your track record is really good about projecting our current year each year. And that looks like it's somewhere around $145 million. The lowest dot right I'm pointing at right here.
Correct.
And it looks like it climbs at a rate of how many million per year?
The percent increase overall that projected for the expenses is about 3.2%.
Okay, and how many dollars is that? You got a certain dollar amount per year you're increasing. It looks like the total spread is about $30 million.
I have to look at the numbers. They're not on here. Yeah. Usually our two-year budget is about $300 million for the general fund.
Yeah. So if I look at, if this is climbing over the next 5 years at $30 million, I look at our last 5 years or any time in our history, I see half of that rate, $15 million.
You're looking there
at expenses
there or revenue?
Well, I'm looking at the revenue. I don't have the expenses on here. But each year we've...
And you're looking at only sales tax and property tax there,
yes.
So it's not a complete picture of
yes,
the general fund revenue.
That's true. So, yes, absolutely.
Fair.
If we grow our expenses twice the rate of our history, yep, we get ourselves in trouble. But this forecast, mm-hmm. twice the rate that we of anything in our history, I don't think it's... I look at it and think, why would we do that?
The history that you're looking at has management interventions in it. It's full of cuts we did each biennial cycle to budget, to balance the budget. The future is, if that's what would happen if we did nothing. That will not happen. We will not sit there and watch the sheep.
The channel hit the rocks.
Right, exactly. So this only tells you what the size of the intervention needed is, given our current projections. It does not say that we will go there. It says we need to have what we call management interventions, otherwise known as reductions.
In other words, I look at this and say, what would government do if we took our hands off the steering wheel? And the answer is basically it would grow at twice the rate as we have in the past.
Right. If we carry forward all the current expenditures.
And those lines would diverge at an even greater rate if you were to factor these one-time costs in.
Right. These one-time costs are not there.
Sure.
Which is exactly what has happened in every budget except 2015 so far. You've spent fund balance. And by spending fund balance, until this year, for probably the last 8 years anyway, going back to 2010, you've spent more than you've taken in.
And this year we're $7 million above the recommended practice, which means we have $7 million fund balance available for one-time expenses. And so we add up these one-time expenses, and we can scratch off the $1.5 million for general. Or the $300,000 for one-time, the jail elimination, $800,000, some of the major things, either a phone system, $1.5 million, or something like that, records content. $1.5 million. So we could absorb all of those just simply with that excess fund balance we have sitting in the general fund now.
we are not as concerned about 2016 as we are about 17, 18. About a third of this issue is our health care medical increases that are coming in 2016. We had a really bad utilization year. We're looking at 13.5% increase in that medical. We also have departmental revenues that are lagging behind that we've been reporting on during our quarterlies, and we'll bring you that information in the readopt as we update the revenues. That's about another third of the issue here.
Yes, and in perspective, first I'll give you a turn back here in a moment here. In perspective, our costs, our medical costs are increasing. We have some major projects we still want to accomplish. And yet I look at the citizens that are paying these bills, and we have the distinguished honor, if you want to call it that, of being the number one fastest growing rate of rent increase in the nation. Our community means that our citizens who are paying these bills have less and less left in their pocket. And yet they've built this $30 million cash reserve that we have, and they pay for all of these millions of dollars of improvements that we've accomplished. They've footed the bill for all of what that has made us very, very healthy now. And it would be inappropriate for me for us to say, even though you have less, we're not going to do anything about it. We're still going to ask you for more. That's where I think it's...
How does renting correlate to property tax?
Cost of living...
The person who's the lessor pays the property tax. The lessee simply pays the rent.
And rent's market-driven.
The cost of living, everything adds up to be the cost of living, whether it be rent or property taxes or anything else. You can bet that if we increased our property taxes, all those landlords are going to pass that on to their tenants. The amount that we charge on top of everything else that has to come out of the citizen's pocket ends up leaving them with less. And the reason on perspective is the knowledge that I think we all have to have in mind that the citizens that are providing the revenue that keeps the lights on here and provides all the services and keeps all our staff equipped to do our jobs, that they have less. They're paying a whole lot more rent. They're paying a whole lot more in the way of costs. And that's the driving force behind this awareness that it's appropriate for us to consider their relief. Along with that also, I see a lot of people that moved to California over the years because they had great weather and they got lots of stuff down there. But the brain drain that's occurring from California, those businesses that are leaving there because they are being taxed to death down there, they want to go somewhere. And their motivation is one reason. They want to find a more business-friendly community that's sending the right messages, that's moving in the right direction, that says there is a community on the West Coast that's actually reduced their property taxes. You want relief? There's relief right there on the West Coast. It's called Clark County, Washington. And it's a little bit. It's not a whole lot per home. It's a little bit. But it goes in the right direction.
Well,
but some of those factors you're talking about are market factors.
Yes.
That if those need to be managed, can be managed in other ways. So reducing property tax that's the end of the stream. If market factors make it impossible for our citizens to live here, we need to look upstream for solutions to that.
Well,
is too far downstream to have an effective application, I think, for relief for citizens.
Well, it happens in 2016.
Well, if I could, you might not like what I'm going to say, but.
Say it.
About
you've been holding back for a long time. Go ahead.
More bulletproof than usual.
I am a landlord in Clark County,
and my rents don't go up just because my property tax goes up. I look at the people that I'm renting to, what they do to help me out and that kind of stuff. It isn't the property tax that makes my rent go up. The most regressive tax in this county and in this state is sales tax. And you saw, your own chart shows that that grew faster than property tax did. And you have the opportunity to take that 5/10, which is what the tax rate is locally, and adjust that if you want to. But I would strongly suggest, as I get ready to leave, it's important to me that when I leave, Clark County stays in the financial health that it was when I worked here. You're going to take the most stable revenue source you have, property tax, and reduce it? That makes no sense to me. You're gonna have put yourself, if you ever have to issue debt again, which I know you don't like that, but if you ever have to do it again, you've taken a revenue source that is stable and you reduced it, and you will have a chance of reducing your rating. Also, if you look at this report right here, there's a chart in here on page 24 that talks about household income. Household income's gone down. Household income is the only way that you're going to get a AAA rating. And it's gone down, which means to me that the fee waiver is attracting less than affordable wage jobs. So that's how I feel about this property tax.
Let me just, I heard what you said, and there's some assumptions there. And that is, well, let me elaborate. There are a number of individuals that extend compassion and empathy and care to their tenants. That said, I'm not going to raise my rents, and you represent one of them, and that's noble and it's good. However, the thing that made national news is that this community, the landlords have increased taxes, or I'm sorry, rents, higher than any other community, faster than any other community. That's, in other words, you are in the minority. That's, we wouldn't have group. Made national news if they didn't raise their rents. That's what made the news. So,
has nothing to do with property tax.
Wait a minute. We're talking about, you talk about raising rents, and that's the fact is that they, rents have been raised, and the market, the supply and demand is what we see playing out there. There's a number of factors in there, and I admit this is only one. But the fact that they are raising them, even though we didn't raise our property taxes, and they're still raising them, so there's not a whole lot of empathy and compassion going on there. That's what's making the news. You can bet that if we did raise our property taxes, then now they have even more excuse to raise their rents and add that on as well. Certainly we are only a factor in the cost of living. The other is, this is not a proposal to do anything with sales tax. This is the sales tax discussion is a different discussion, has nothing to do with this discussion. This is a proposal to lower tax. I remember, unless we forget where we came from, being interviewed with senior citizens when I ran for this office, and that grandma that stood up and was steaming because her property taxes were going up, and she said it was her property taxes that were going up, and she was afraid she was going to lose her home. Mark Bolt was right next to me. He's the guy who raised property taxes 6 years in a row. I don't remember his answer, but I remember mine. And I remember assuring her that I would not raise her property taxes, and I would do everything I can to lower her property taxes. Cool. I want to relieve her stress. I want to give her hope. And yes, it's a little bit, but it moves her in the right direction. Yes, sir.
So I'm concerned we're getting off the subject. We're drifting into philosophy and not facts. So I want to go back a little bit. On our chart that we have here, our biennium ends 2017 at the end?
2016. The current biennium ends in 2016.
Okay.
So at the end of 2016, fund balance would be at $28 million
mm-hmm.
without any additional requests. You will see a long list of requests in the readopt that's coming up, and we do have to address some of those one-time needs. So $28 million is what we're projecting for the end of the biennium, for this current biennium, without addressing those one-times.
$20 million.
28.
Addition. $28 million.
In fund balance. Total fund balance.
Total.
Not
additional.
Oh, fund balance.
Yeah,
I thought
correct.
That's what you're asking for. So I go back and I look at these charts and depends on what the chart looks like. And I was looking at the end of our biennium, and we were always under the direction that at the we are very, very stable through this next biennium, but we have more issues coming up in the next biennium.
Correct.
And so that's the reason I was looking at what we have here. I know that we're still making small headways along the way. I'm not sure. I appreciate what you're saying, that we take the most stable thing that we have is property taxes. But I look at property taxes and what they've done since I bought my first house at $8,000. And so then I go back and look at what I pay for property tax today, which is nearly half of the over. In fact, I pay more taxes annually than the value of my home was. And I just don't see this proportionate thing that's gone on. And it's somewhere now. I do realize, and I always remind people, if you look at the county property tax, it's the smallest thing on your property tax. It really is. So I don't see the big bite. And I look at sales tax being as even though it's more vulnerable with the economy, but the big bust that we just had was very unusual. We probably don't expect another one for a long time, even though it's, because I watch the stock market, and it's been radical and not stable. Somewhere I feel that we have to make a down niche in property values. We've artificially inflated the values, something horrible, and we've done that through several ways. We've done that through a lack of supply and demand. In the last 2 years, I saw a 5-acre.
That's market. That's not county action. That's a function of the market.
Related.
Tom, have the floor,
it's
please.
It's related because the value, it just goes to show the value. So when the value of a 5-acre piece of bare property can fluctuate 100% in 2 years, there's something wrong. And the owner of that property is not getting the benefit from it. I mean, he's taking the loss and the hit. When I went back and did the math as to what it was, in my opinion, for government to have their revenues increase by $3 million a year with doing nothing, and that's not looking at all the other pockets that come in and the new construction, that we should be able to live within that budget. And we also recognize that we've had our collective bargaining. I thought our collective bargaining, we already put aside another 2% out there for the following biennium, or no, for the following year, but we just didn't get that third year. And so that shouldn't be in here. That would turn that down a little bit.
That is included in here. That is built in, and we do have the money set aside in contingency for that. What we do not have is the medical increases that we saw that were much higher than
and
what was budgeted.
And that's something else. In our self-insured medical, our first year of being self-insured, we saw very little, if any, benefit from that, and that's supposed to be experienced in our second and third year. So we're looking at an additional $1 million savings there, I think.
We actually held rates constant, no increases for 2 years. And then what happened is we had a really bad utilization year, and that increases our rates in order to be able to cover that.
I'm talking about the money that when we formed Green Self-Insured.
I think you're talking about the reserve. We had to set aside money to make up our reserve. And once that reserve was established, then you begin saving. Some savings.
Yeah.
But you still have the question of how much is spent. And while a self-insured plan, assuming everything works right, will always have a lower cost for all the members than if we were paying, we were under contract with Blue Cross or Kaiser. Mm-hmm. Well, Kaiser we are under contract with. But for Blue Cross, you still have increases. And where you have people that are gravely ill,
And
those costs are very substantial.
And Adriana has adjusted for that.
To some extent.
And she was very conservative in that, because we looked out at what the other people were doing and how it was being bumped up. And ours, we hadn't experienced it, but she adjusted for that, anticipating that hit to come. But to offset that hit, we have all that money set aside now as required by law to be self-insured. Now those savings could be spent on other bills because we've already set the other money aside.
Well, I'll let her talk about that.
We have required reserves in the self-insurance fund that we are accruing that are meant as a backstop for claims, for paying medical claims. However, we still are seeing a 13.5% increase in our employer contribution rates that are paid by the general fund and all funds that have personnel that has to go to the fund to pay for the annual claims projected for 2016. We can't touch the reserves for that unless we're
that
in a desperate situation, obviously.
Yeah, I'm just saying, we've been taking that money, that profit that we made, and we've been putting that aside in that reserve as law tells us to do.
It was part of the collective rate.
Right. Now we don't have to be setting that money off to the side.
And yet we still have to have a 13.5% increase. It would have been more without that.
So. Right, but see, that's after the fact. We've satisfied the role of self-insurance.
Right,
we achieved our objectives by going self-insured.
And now we should
but our
be
costs
reaping.
Are still going up at a very, very fast rate.
Right. So,
also in
so
here,
instead of having $1 million savings, we're going to have $800,000.
Also in here are increased employer contributions to PERS retirement.
Yes, our PERS retirement rate just went from 9 to 11%. It's gone further up to 12.2%.
That's already in here because that was...
That's part of the projection. That's part of this gap here.
Yeah.
In 2017,
there's
another
increase. Where I'm going with this is that this gap is fluctuating. It's probably not that big. The worst case scenario is it could be that bad.
The point is there's some things we don't have any control over. The PERS contribution rate, the state sets that. We have to contribute whatever the percentage is.
Let me back
healthcare
up
costs,
where I was.
We have very little control over health care costs.
Yep.
Plus 70% of our budget, I believe, is law and justice.
Right.
And 70% of that budget or higher is labor.
Right.
Tom, you still got the floor.
So, My point is, our chart is fluctuating the whole time. It's not embedded in stone because there's a lot of things that we haven't taken totally in consideration. We haven't taken into consideration, round numbers, the benefit savings of health care. Even though it's gone up, we're not going to experience the $1 million up front like we thought we were going to do. Like I said, it could probably be $800,000.
The health care savings are already here. And we've already accounted for that. The additional
and we took those and put in reserves as required. Now we don't have to do that. So let me move on. These are kind of some examples that I would like to understand and solidify a little bit more so I would understand it, because I don't see a big difference between sales tax and property tax. Recognizing that sales tax is more vulnerable, it goes up and down, and I guess the biggest show of that is when I went back and reviewed the chart, when we had the downturn in our economy, we lost a few million dollars, $2 million. We never lost more than $2 million according to this chart.
No, we lost the first year alone, we were down $5 million.
You went from round numbers of 23 to 19. Wait a minute. I'm sorry, you're right.
We went down $5 million the first year, $3 million the second year, for a total of $8 million.
Your numbers are different than mine. I'm looking at the...
Our sales tax was down about 20% from the peak.
Yeah, 23 to 19 right. million. 23 to 19. So anyway, I definitely support one of these being reduced. I don't see the cliff at the end of 2017, and we have a couple years to make those adjustments. And I would like to learn more this next week and come back and decide which direction we're going to go. I'm kind of like Counselor Mador, to be sitting on $30 million and watching it grow on a monthly basis.
Our recommended fund balance is $23
million. Uh-huh.
Just as a point, Clark County does not set aside money for major projects. So, for example, the projects we did for the sheriffs, replacing Oracle, the phone records. Mm-hmm. The only way we funded these major projects that are needed every biennium is through those one-time savings out of the general fund.
Mm-hmm.
So when we have a little bit above fund balance, that's where we turn around and we address some of those needs. So that additional fund balance for this biennium is how the finance team was going to look at paying for some of the things that are coming up in the readopt that are must-dos. There are some things that we cannot just not do.
Yeah.
Our records content management system is coming to end of life, our phone system.
That's a huge amount of money.
That is.
A huge amount of money.
Yeah.
And, of course, that need continues also.
The one thing that I want to mention is that in addition to the things that Adriana said is, we have a certain amount that we have to assign to liabilities that we can't spend. And that's not reflected in these numbers.
No, so this is unassigned fund balance only.
But at the end of 15,
there's $2 million in here for unassigned, for assigned compensated absences
right.
carry forward.
But we'll have more than that.
Right.
We always do.
The liability is larger, absolutely.
We hope we're doing it right now. We won't have any more of those.
Well, we always do.
So keep in mind that we have, Adriana, you made the point. This is unassigned
right.
fund balance. And we have normally budget turn back at the end of each year as well.
And that's what's included in here.
That is included in here. That's an important point. Thank you. For 15-16, the savings from vacancies, and it's all included in here.
Good. So this is very realistic, and it is unassigned. In other words, this is total reserve.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And
that's all I have. So.
All right. Well, I look at this, and basically, this is what happens in the future when we take our hands off the wheel and we let government do what government does on its own to grow at twice the rate of anything else. This is the actual track record. John, you made a point, and I agree that we absolutely have an obligation to ensure that our credit rating, our criteria that we achieve in order to ensure that a credit rating is good, whatever debt we have is low. We have increased our solidified position. This is from the budget office from previous years, and it shows not only that our budget unassigned fund balance or general fund reserves had a high of $13 million in 2004, and this was projecting it was going to drop down to go negative, but in reality, if you overlap this curve that comes from the budget office today, it shows that it really was $20 million. So this did not materialize because we intervened.
That doesn't include permanent reserve and some other things. That's a different scale. So.
Well, it's the only one I have. So in other words, it's similar to these things, and it forecasts this kind of a result when we take our hands off the wheel. In reality, this is if we were to do everything that we're presuming here, then we go from $30 million, which is $7 million above our best recommended practices from the state, to still being above at $28 million at the end of 16, with the cut.
that doesn't
include. No, that does not include the cut. This does not include a property tax reduction. A property tax reduction.
Isn't that what you asked for?
It does not.
It does not.
I have a chart that shows that if you would like. It basically adds another, it takes away another $1.2
million. Yeah, right. In other words, the $28 million becomes $26.8. In other words, it's still well above the $23 million best recommended practice, which means we have a very good, if you look at this track record, this in comparison to the previous history is increasing stability and strength. When the banks look at us and say how stable and how healthy are Clark County, this says we're about as good as we've ever had in our past, as in the recent in any history that in the time period being considered here. So we've increased, and that's good. You're leaving us in good solid ground, John, and you were a part of that financially conservative policy, each one of those that we've adopted that helped us to achieve this. And I don't want to compromise that. This directive, this proposal includes upholding those adopted financial policies. We don't. This is not a proposal to cut any of that. This is a proposal to still do good things, and the same kind of expenses that we're facing with the increased cost of medical insurance, we're not alone. Obamacare is hitting all of the citizens. They're getting that same kind of sticker shock increase as well. And that's why, that's one more reason why I feel like we can't consider what's impacting us without also realizing it's impacting them too.
So I'd like to recommend that we come back to this next week. I'd like to have some more information, but I think that we can still give direction to our manager now. That we plan on removing roughly $1 million, I think.
Well, if so you're not ready to move forward on this, then why don't you remove back up your second to the motion that we just made?
Do what?
If you're not willing to go to vote yes on the motion that you just seconded to move forward, then we would withdraw that.
What I'm suggesting is that we could still move forward, but not verbatim, as you.
In other words, you want to move this. You want to bring this, revisit this proposal, bring it back as proposed next week.
Yeah, because part of what I pick up on that we may have been asking the wrong question. You know, we get the answer by what we ask for, and maybe we're asking the wrong question. So
I also have some additional perspective that I think would help us to understand where we are that I can share with our county manager that for next week as well. So why don't I modify the motion and say the motion would be to bring this proposal back next week. Yeah, are you good with that as a seconder?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And that's our modified motion. Okay, any more discussion on that?
Yes.
Okay, it's your turn.
Of course. And I really think, to be fair, you guys have two votes to do whatever you're going to do. And if we need to get a timer in here have a little more fair allocation of time in the discussion, we can do that. So back to the primary point here, whether it's sales tax or property tax, that's general fund money. So when you guys look at our major liabilities and pressing needs, how do you propose that with reduced revenue we make whatever improvements our professional staff has come forward and told us are needed in Oracle, improvements in a phone system, records content, security, IT, and compliance, because we're hearing that these aren't optional. We're hearing these are necessary upgrades.
Do you want to answer that question?
And I don't have the in-depth knowledge that this isn't one staff person that brought this forward. These are different technical people with different technical expertise that have come forward and told us these are necessary. So We're talking general fund dollars, and we're talking an intent to reduce them, and that doesn't include the jail ventilation, parks maintenance, and some other things. So how do you propose that we meet our obligations with a reduced revenue?
I think I heard from Constable Adore, worst case scenario, we have enough money to pay for that right now and still have more than 26 days, 26 million.
Do you think our financial staff is making it up out of thin air when they say there's only that the systemic deficit will need to be managed and controlled, and the less revenue you have to do it, the harder that's going to be? I don't think they're making this up out of thin air.
If I can answer your question, how do we propose to pay for major new capital expenses? The obvious answer is that we plan ahead. And we schedule them.
If you can
let me have the floor to answer, please.
Plan.
The answer would be for us to plan a time and to put something aside for each of, so that when we get there, we can make the purchase because we planned ahead and we've set aside a little bit between now and then, or a schedule between now and then. That's the responsible way of doing it. What we've done so far is we have made... that's one of the requests I have, and that is for us to be able to look at all the major capital expenses that we have funded out of cash over the last recent history, and see that we have paid a huge amount out of cash without planning anything ahead. Yet we got it done, and we're still sitting at $30 million in cash reserves. So the question, path going forward, how would we do that? We'd plan for it. We plan a schedule, and a amount that we would set aside so that when we get there, we can pay for it.
So you'll have some examples next week.
Yes, and I'll work with Mark on that. The other is, we are not talking about reduced revenue. All we're doing is cutting back the amount of growth a little bit. Adriana, the forecasted amount of growth is how much per year?
Overall, our general fund is forecasted between sales tax, property tax, and all other revenues to grow at approximately 1% a year. The sales tax is forecasted to grow 8.5% in the current year, followed by 3.6% each year thereafter through 2020. Historical growth rate is 3.3%.
So
property tax.
Okay. Thank you. We got that. You've itemized that already. The question
That's
is, for this forecasted growth, what is that growth rate that you forecast?
It's about 1% total general fund revenue.
You're pointing at the expense line.
I'm looking at the expense line.
Oh, the expense line is about 3.2%.
How much in this graph? This is the 3.2%?
About a little bit above 3% overall for expense growth.
That looks like to me it'd be a lot higher, but you're the numbers person.
So let's bring it back next week with the answers.
Yes.
And you're probably asking the correct questions this time.
Yes, in favor of the modified motion, which is to bring this back next week.
Yes.
Are we ready for a vote on that?
We'll bring it back. We got to talk about it.
All this is bring it back next week.
Okay, whatever motion is on the table, could we have a precise restatement of
Yes.
that?
The motion, as we modified it, is to bring this proposal back next week.
When you say proposal, you're talking about the 2% reduction.
This wording.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so I understand the motion. Thank you.
Okay. Any more discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Okay.
You want to do it now?
All right.
Okay.
We'll move on to, and between now and then, whatever questions we can ask or information that staff can help provide, I'll submit it to Mark, Mark McCauley, at least my request, so we have more perspective. You going to say something?
Yeah, could I just make one comment? And I've been thinking about this. One of the things that staff here is, we're here to help respond to policy. And I've been involved just the last couple of years in how we go through the budget process, and we spend a lot of time off-site and doing other things, and it gives us time to prepare and plan and use whatever financial resources that we have to make things work. This last biennial budget, we worked really hard to balance the budget from an operational standpoint. The first time that I know of since I've been here that we've been able to balance revenues and expenses from an operational standpoint. And no one at that time, you know, 12 months ago or gave us any indication that this was going to be an initiative. And now we're mid-budget cycle going into a readopt, which really is procedural at best, making major policy changes. For me to comprehend this, it's just hard. And so, you know, when we go through even the retreat that we had earlier in the year, if we had some indication that we were going to have to plan for this, we could have been spending that time doing that. Instead, it's like now we have this big rush to try and come to some, you know, resolution. It's just hard.
Slightly different viewpoint here. I was at Tacoma last week, WFOA, Washington Finance Association, and State Treasurer McIntyre was there. And, you know, the state has a lot different problems than we have in Clark County. One of them is funding basic education. He's going to propose a constitutional amendment to put in an income tax to pay for it.
Heard that 2 years ago.
And do I think an income tax will go through? Probably not in the state of Washington. But here's a man who knows the finances, I think, as well as I do, of the county. He knows of the state. And he didn't propose cutting property taxes or sales tax with that income tax going in place.
Sure.
But I think they come out of the last session upside down.
Yeah. Well, that's what Mark just told you.
Sure.
Except for 15, you've been upside down every year for at least the last 10 years. You've finally been really doing a really good job of building up that fund balance, which is really good for rating agencies and really good for your pay-as-you-go mentality. It's not good to spend it.
Yeah. If we, in my opinion, if we spend any of it, it'd be the frosting off the top. It wouldn't be the real gut of it. Because I agree with you, it's always kind of nice to know you have that there. It's nice to have that somewhat in check so we... And we know a lot more now than we did a year ago. And we know a lot more now than we did 8 months ago.
Well, so. And if we knew going into the 17-18 budget cycle that this is the direction, you know, we have time to do that. But coming in with such a short time span and trying to balance 16 after we balanced it, now we have $1.2 million or whatever it'll be less to balance it with 4 months or less than 4 months left in the year. That's gonna be hard.
I'm not understanding what you have to do.
Balance it?
Yeah, because we're not changing any budgets.
We don't have the revenue.
So what I'm saying is that we're talking the frosting on the cake or the frosting on the reserve.
In other words, you want to spend the fund balance. You really don't care about whether the revenues and the expenses equal. You're just going to spend.
Well, no, absolutely we do. But I'm not understanding. We have a 2-year budget. We have another year to go in our biennial budget.
Right. And in the chart that Councilor Mador has, if you look at that trend, how we've been able to do that, we intervene. Every time we have the need to, we intervene. When we go back to 2006, we doubled our road fund version. Each time we had to intervene. So what you're asking us to do now in 16 to balance the budget is to intervene somewhere, because we had planned $1.2 million in property taxes that's not going to be there.
The real problem with this discussion and this idea coming up out of the blue, basically, is we fail to develop and follow some kind of consistent policy process while having the expectation of our financial and operational staff that they think out long term, that they let us know what their needs are going to be out there. And so what we expect of them is to plan and hold the ship together in the long term, which is their responsibility. But then we intercede with sudden policy changes. And this is exactly what this is. And that is why it concerns me. And then it concerns me when I hear a second component thrown in, which is a potential for reduction in sales tax. It's not that all of us wouldn't just love to pay less sales tax. That's what it does for me personally. I try to think about how do I fulfill my responsibility here, and that is to try to help set a policy direction and then help maintain that policy direction. And that doesn't mean anything is etched in stone. We need to be able to think about things. But I'm worried that these two issues have just come up very suddenly, and it leaves absolute uncertainty for the future. And you cannot do long-range financial planning when what you're doing today and this year and next year, it fluctuates so much or becomes, it's not a steady path. And if we don't provide a steady path of policy for the staff to develop a steady path for finances and operations, we need the harmony of the two.
When we decided to pay off our bonds, it started right here. We brought up and said, we have the ability to call our bonds in and save that money in interest. We did that right here. We sat down and talked about it, turned around, took action, and voted on it next week. So you got to start really somewhere, and that's where we are. We're talking about this.
That's really an asset liability issue versus anything else.
Well, I was using it for an example of change through discussion and action. You've got to start.
Can I have a turn here, please? John, you said something that some very smart guy at our state level is proposing a constitutional amendment to add income tax for Washington State, as though he has some kind of wisdom. That kind of wisdom is prevailing in California, and it's called a brain drain. And if that kind of thing prevails in our state, we will follow suit with California for a brain drain too. That doesn't represent the citizens. The citizens have voted consistently for lower taxes and consistently for a two-thirds majority vote required to raise taxes for years and voted down income tax. It may be the voice is coming from the inside government, but that's not coming from the people.
That's philosophy.
You still have no... Yeah, I know. He represented a philosophy, and I represent the people's side of that as properly elected. The other argument is that somehow we are too late. This is the 11th hour. And I would say, no, we're not too late. This is planning for next year. And we don't make our decision until December of each year what we're going to do for the property taxes. You already have the heads up. You've had I've been talking with budget office for weeks for this, if not a month. You've got months before in the 2016 to implement this. We also are sitting well above our recommended fund balance. And we have been spending fund balance. It's not just to simply be above and beyond the recommended balance of $23 million. We're supposed to be at 30, and next year, 28. We've been spending that fund balance to catch up for those major expenses that have been on hold for so long that needed to be repaid or purchased. We paid cash for those. And we can still afford to do so next year. We don't want to sit on more cash balance than what is necessary when we have needs that it could be used for. That's what that cash balance is for. And no, I don't want to go below the recommended limit. But I want to make sure that if it's above that limit, we allocate it for its intended purpose, which is to replace stuff that needs to be replaced and properly equip the staff to do their job. I would say it is not too late for next year. I would say even if we did this cut like this, next year we're looking at $28 million. That's above $5 million above our recommended balance. And we have no plans. There's no schedule. There's no dollar amounts that are hooked up to a schedule for any new major purchases. We need those. We ought to plan for that. So I'm thinking this is the appropriate time for us ahead of December to plan. And that's how changes happen. We're well above, well ahead of 2016. So I think I'm saying now is the time to plan. Now is the time for us to be able to set a direction that we can count on. Stabilize the ship, keep it in the center of the navigation channel.
So when I mathematically, I just came up with the same number I think you did here. Mm-hmm. So what we're asking for out of roughly $57 million, we're asking for $1.4 million reduction.
1.2,
you're
right?
You're looking at only two of the general fund revenues in the chart. There's
right.
only sales tax
right.
and property tax.
So we have
tax.
Other
the
revenues
other
besides
half,
this?
The other half is going the other way, which are departmental revenues, where mm-hmm. we have downsides in the clerk's office, in district court, indirects going down. Mm-hmm. So when you look at a blended growth rate, it's about 1% a year in revenues. So I just want to make it clear that we're just looking at two revenue streams, selected
yeah.
revenue streams
yeah.
in
and
that.
And some
picture.
Of the others, I think her point is some of the others are negative. So they're going to
yes.
actually bring that down. So you can't think of them as extra revenue. They will actually be draws
offset
on that.
Something else.
They'll be something
they'll offset
that will bring
the decreases
that, down.
That are occurring elsewhere.
Right.
Okay. So I hope to find those this next week.
Yeah.
Thank
certainly
you.
Our revenue is increasing faster than our population. Our population is 1.some%. Last year, the OFM says it was 2.04%, and yet our numbers show 4% in growth in property taxes and sales tax, twice that rate. So we'll bring it back next week. Hopefully, we'll have more answers. I'll submit the requests for more graphs to be able to turn on the lights even better for us. So we can move on to our next... I guess we have a consensus. All in favor of bringing it back next week, say aye.
Well, not all of us.
We already did that.
Two of us were.
Did we already vote?
We did that.
Yeah, because I remember Councillor Stewart.
I know you said you weren't going to.
She said
that
no.
was after you two said yes.
We said yes. Okay.
I said so
we,
no.
So it passed 2-1. And thank you for being financially conservative. I value that. Accessory dwelling units. Because... we haven't had a chance to go through that. I want to just simply introduce it and bring this back next week. The overview of this is basically Peter Silliman has worked to prepare this. He prepares at our request. He's an available resource. Let me just read here in the background just the quick thing. In April of 2015, the BIA sent a list of suggestions they believed would benefit the local economy and building industry. One of those suggestions was to allow accessory dwelling units, which is ADUs, in the rural areas. We already have them inside the urban growth boundary. On September 17, the Commission on Aging, that was headed up by Pastor Bill Ritchie, did a great job, in a joint session with BOCC, asked the BOC to consider the same request. And then, in other words, provide the same benefits to the citizens outside the urban growth boundary as we provide inside the urban growth boundary. So this is existing code. It's that chapter 40.260.020. It's just the markup is there, what strike out and what is as underlined is new. And so we can bring that back next week. I encourage you, whatever homework you want to do between now and then, to extend the same benefits across the county and not somehow play favorites with inside and disadvantage the citizens
so
outside.
I think Peter explained to me that one, we have a income limit and the city does it. Is that right?
No, this is independent of income. This just simply extends the existing code. It doesn't restrict the same benefit to outside the urban growth boundary.
Just to a family member?
No, this just simply, this says that the primary residence must be occupied by the owner. That's the way the current code is. So we don't propose to change that. All we're doing is changing the scope of where this applies.
For senior citizens.
For
the reason I asked that
ADUs
question
are
because
for
I don't want people putting a large mobile home in the backyard to rent.
Mobile homes they're not considered to be ADUs inside the urban growth boundary.
Don't get technical on me here because we had an incident in the county or the city where some law allowed someone to move a large mobile home of some type, and they were concerned because it filled the backyard and overlooked into the neighbor's back over
yes.
the fence. Remember that?
Yes. We
so was
can't.
That city or county?
It was in the county.
Uh-huh.
We are not allowed by state law to distinguish between mobile homes and or what are referred to as manufactured homes and single-family stick-built or on-site construction homes. We're actually prohibited, and the state has preempted that area. The distinction that we treat between, I think what you're referring to, are recreational vehicles, Commissioner Madore, and you're not allowed to have RVs, but manufactured homes have to be allowed. The only way we treat them differently is under our subdivision code, and we just require them to tell us so that we make sure the lots are big enough to handle, have the right lot and width dimensions to handle the setbacks so that property owners buying into them don't get stuck. But otherwise, we are required to treat them the same.
I thought it was in here, Chris, and I'm glad to hear that it doesn't make any difference, but I thought it was in here that it did make a distinction, but if we don't have the state law to allow the distinction, then we just simply always follow state law and just simply an ADU is an ADU regardless. So I fully agree, absolutely follow the state law.
So I understand we need more hardship, hands-on to help hardship cases. This proposal wouldn't necessarily have to do with hardship. It would just be family member?
Chris, there's nothing in our current code here that has anything to do with hardship. This is just...
No, I think what you're describing is we have temporary hardship dwellings that have a two-year limit, and those are typically where a parent wants to take care of a child or a child to take care of a parent,
yeah.
Or you can even have caretakers on your property if you have larger property. And those are allowed on the basis of some declaration or affidavit they have to sign. Those do have income kind of or parameters, and I think that may be what you're describing. But ADUs, as they're set out in 4260.020, don't have an income limit and are, once they're granted, they're approved permanently, recognizing the limits of an accessory dwelling unit. I've got some comments because you can't really compare apples in the city with oversized apples in the county, and because of, for example, the utilities they're served by and some other things. But a lot, some of it can be accommodated, some of it we just have to be aware of, and some of it will be a little more site specific. But I'll wait till next week, or if you have questions during the week, I'm glad to talk to you about it.
I'll be happy to talk to you about it. I want to make sure that your input is welcome on this, Chris.
Sure. And one other thing you need to specifically be aware of is on applicability under B1, we say the rural district. One thing the board has to specifically address is, are you intending to allow this in the resource districts? Because the way it's written, it would allow it in the resource
yes.
districts. Okay, we just have to be aware. That complicates your work because you have to show that we're not reducing the area available for agriculture or forest.
We're not.
I'm not taking sides. All I'm suggesting is it complicates the analysis, and we have to specifically address it. So I'm not taking anybody's position. I'm just bringing
Chris,
it up.
Answer the one question for me. Isn't
sure.
it assumed that regardless of the zoning out there, regardless of the parcel size, that each dwelling, regardless if it be R, FR, or Ag, is considered to be on a 1 acre area, and that we can constrain if there be an ADU, it needs to fall within that 1 acre area. That would solve that problem, right?
I'm trying to figure out how to answer what I think you're describing in terms of the 1 acre is open space. And that's where taxation...
No, I'm talking about the dwelling on a parcel.
Okay, well, the dwelling on a parcel may or may not sit on 1 acre because you have to take into consideration all the support or accessory structures that may be on the property, and you could maybe impose a limit. Nothing in our code says that they're limited to 1 acre for the house and accessory and other non... or all the other residential-related uses. Many people spread them out so that they don't have them on top of each other. So if we want to impose that restriction, we can, but that's not currently a part of the code.
You know, what's missing entirely from this conversation is a memorandum from our planning staff indicating to us that they've read this and here are their comments or concerns, and Chris as well, legal. And so, some of your concerns, I think, are well-founded, and it doesn't have to be a family member. Once it's constructed, it's a rental unit. I assure you, I've seen these go up all over in the city.
Yeah. So, I made myself a little note here, and so many times when we see legislation, we look at it and we wonder why. So sometimes if we have intent...
You mean the state law?
Yeah, you make a state law. Sometimes you address the intent, what's the problem, and what's the problem we're trying to solve. That might help us get there, not necessarily this direction.
I would encourage us to contact the Aging Commission and also the BIA and ask them for their insight on this. What are they thinking? What are they envisioning? Planning staff has had this for many months. They've already gone through this, and so this is no surprise to them. The path forward would be for us to be able to come up with a concept, with a goal to accomplish it, send it through the pipeline, which includes planning staff, that includes the planning commission, and brings it back to us in a proposed form. We send it to them in a proposed form, we run it through the mail, and it comes back. We consider it.
ADUs are planning commission jurisdiction, are they not?
Yeah, if we change this, this will go to the PC.
So I'm just asking to have time to read it. I'm confused. It looks like you're bringing it forward.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I'm confused about is earlier this year we were approving planned unit. Oh, those were planned unit developments, not ADUs.
Mm-hmm. That's a different topic. I'll address those two.
So Tom, the accessory dwelling unit, when it was first thought up, and this is to both of you, the case for them is argued. It's a mother-in-law unit. It's a family member, low-income unit. It's
you mentioned caretaker.
Well, the caretaker is a little bit different because I think it's a kind of have a little different application there, but it's the same kind of idea, and that it's affordable housing and all the rest. All they are is rental units. That's what we cannot forget. It becomes a rental unit on a piece of property. You can rent it to anybody.
That one situation that we had, it was horrific. In fact, where did we end up on that? Last I remember, it was going to be left there.
Actually, it was left there because the way it worked out, there wasn't really anything we could do with the property owner. The mobile home wound up higher, and so they were looking into the house, and that was the concern of the predominant the neighbor who had to live next door to the thing, but. So there wasn't any code that we had in place, so we had to approve it. Because at one point, if you remember, we were going to impose a temporary delay on our ordinance. But
well,
he had already gotten permits.
Was that inside or outside there? Well, it had to be inside.
Because
this only allows them outside.
I don't remember.
It was neighborhood.
I just don't recall. Yeah. Because remember, we allowed temporary dwellings. Hardship dwellings all throughout the county, but I don't recall.
And this is not that. Okay, we'll bring it back next week.
Will we have comments from? I don't even know if it's a good idea yet. I need information to know, because what I have in front of me is somebody, Peter, has revised the code.
Per my request.
Well, that's okay. So it's you and Peter.
Yes.
I need more input than just that you guys want to do this. I would like to know what is the planning department, because this is a planning application. Well, it's housing units.
That's kind of what I talked about.
Yeah, to get the whole...
The intent. Are we looking to help aging someone, because it's with David, is that his name? David? The guy in charge of community on aging, or...
Pastor Bill Ritchie.
Oh, Ritchie. Oh. So, what did he want? What was the goal? Who are we trying to take care of, or what are we doing?
Actually, this doesn't really specify who can occupy. We don't regulate to that. All this does is extend to the rest of the county outside the urban boundary what's already available inside. And I would encourage you to talk with him directly, because he can. He can speak for himself, and it would be not inappropriate for me to try to speak for him.
His idea was to help the elderly.
I would think let him answer that question.
Okay.
And for older people, unless their kids live on property and build an ADU, and then it really is not a mother-in-law unit, but it is where people who need a little more help move in proximity to their own families, and they work as a family. One of the things we found when we looked at the city at accessory dwelling units, and the reason that I think in the past they had not been part of a rural development was the people who need those services are people who need medical, who need, the services that are usually available closer in without needing to drive so far.
What you describe is what I understand the county has. But what he says is that the city has something greater than what we have. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, the city, which city? Vancouver?
I assume Vancouver?
I haven't read it all.
We're talking about...
I don't know what Vancouver's policy is. Whatever it is,
they're tightening their policy up.
And
now.
Which is not going to solve the problem of being insufficient housing to meet supply to meet the demand.
Well,
I would say,
the
city certainly would not make any policy having to do with the outside the urban growth boundary or outside the outside their city limits. But keep in mind, I sit on the Southwest Washington Aging and Disabilities Governing Board. I love that organization. Their mission is to provide care. Givers, caseworkers that go out and visit grandma wherever she may be in a 5-county area, and their goal is to keep grandma in her home. Normally, senior citizens don't want to leave their home that they grew up on or that they raised their family on and bring them into the inner city limits, and because they're going to get services there. Health and Human Services provides ample funding and all the organizational care to leave grandma the freedom to stay in her home out there in outside the urban, wherever she may be in the 5-county area, and not have her lose her home and have to be moved in order to get that kind of care.
Understood and completely agree. ADUs are a totally different matter. That doesn't keep an ADU doesn't keep grandma in her home.
This was in counter to the point that you said that I thought I understood, that if they need some kind of assistance, they're going to have to move into those are only available in the city limits.
No, it's that seniors typically choose a more urban environment. So if they decide to move, they choose more urban. So they have services closer around. In some cases, they want bus lines because they go from driving to taking C-Tran. Poor things.
Well, what I want to make sure is that we don't force them to make that choice.
Yeah. So which point, Tom, are you showing me? You're reading the other side.
Sounds like in your explanation and coming from Richie. I'm not sure, but I think I detected in there that maybe allow Grandma to build a more permanent place on that property.
Well, it could very well be that they're the original homestead, mom and pop, have raised their family, and now their family's using their homestead, and they want to have a mother-in-law quarters, or they want to be able to have the ability for two families to look care. Normally, the family members become the caregivers.
Yeah,
to look in on their parents.
I think that's what we have.
Not outside the urban growth boundary.
Well, that's what a temporary dwelling would allow.
This is
that is a current. I understand.
Temporary.
I'm just saying. I understand, but the idea was written anyhow to provide it on a continuous basis. It's just reviewed every 2 years, but you can do it forever. And what it does is it allows a residence for as long as you need it, as long as those criteria are there. So if kids grow up and they no longer need help, if parents pass away and they don't need that residence, then they can be moved and then you go back to having the density. So it is a slightly different approach, but it does address that issue of mom needing help or kids needing help, but I don't want to say it's the same because it isn't. I understand mm-hmm. your distinction, but it does address some of the same issues. It's just different.
So this is just simply a geographic extension for what we already have inside Urban Growth Boundary. So we can bring that back next week. In the meantime, input would be really, really good, especially for those two that have asked us to respond as their representatives to allow them that freedom. And anybody else we can check with.
So before we agree to bring it back, will planning staff have time to review the draft of the code change?
Sure, I'll have Oliver and I'll have Marty look at it as well.
Okay. And your comments will come back to us too?
Sure. It may be that if you want to schedule me something for, I don't know what my calendar looks like Monday, but if you want me to come to one-on-ones, I can talk about it then or I'd rather get a memorandum.
Okay, I know that's a pain, but
no,
then I have...
Write it up.
And it saves you meeting three times.
I'm looking at this, and it's already been drafted with changes.
Yes.
So this must be our code, mm-hmm. and then what's proposed here is the new language here.
Yep. Exactly.
So if you go back and read this, it should help us.
It's a very specific modification of the existing code.
But, I see what it is.
Okay.
I understand.
Because I'm looking, and
it's
this existing
code, and then anything there that Medore or Silliman thought should be deleted is stricken through. Anything added is underlined.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, and that's the format they used, but that wasn't developed with any discussion from us. So I want to know what planning thinks about it, if they see...
Well, you're the policymaker.
Huh?
You're the policymaker. You got to tell planning.
We can make a policy.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean we don't ask for feedback from our professional staff that we pay a lot of money
to. At a glance, when I'm reading this, there's hardly any change at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there are some significant changes. But I haven't read the whole thing.
Okay.
I'll
ask staff. Have you talked to staff through this? Are you?
Peter has worked with staff for months on this.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Peter works with staff.
Including Mark.
So Peter will be back Monday, so we can ask him what the staff is, or we could call staff.
So how many other things are staff working on that I've never heard of until I get into a Wednesday board time meeting?
Probably about a dozen things I'm working on all
Could
the time.
I get a list of what Seliman is working on? Seliman works for the county, right?
Yep.
So Seliman should give us a list and tell us what he's working on.
Sometimes if I'm working on something, it's confidential. So, and the same thing, you might be working on something that's confidential. So he works for each one of us, but confidentiality is something. Now, I can share with you anything I'm working on, but it's not up to Peter to do that. Because it's my project, I'll share that with you.
Well, I'm trying to think if I've ever worked on anything that I've told Axel, don't tell anybody.
Well, it's a general practice in legislation that if I'm working on something that, unless I want you to know, first of all, it might not ever materialize. It'd be a waste of your time and mine. And it might be something really so far-fetched that you might want to support it.
Okay. Even when I disagree with you, I find you very likable.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Do I have that fault, too?
Okay.
Jury's out.
Okay. Anything else?
No.
Anything else, Tom?
No.
Mark?
I'm good.
I can make a motion that we adjourn.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you.